The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome to Agribusiness Innovations with Jody White and his guest in studio today. I got a little treat.
Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. Welcome to Agribusiness Innovation, of course, here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And one of the fastest growing trends in the world or industries within food is the probiotic industry. It was forecast to grow to about $87 billion by the end of year 2023. And it is an industry that is growing in Trinidad right now, very, very slowly. And with me today, I have a guest from the company Amari Probiotics. Our guest is Dominique Himiob. So Dominique, welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM.
Thank you for having me and good morning, everyone.
All right, so let's start off this conversation. I buy yogurt sometimes and I see probiotics written on the yogurt. What exactly is a probiotic?
I love this question. So a probiotic essentially is good bacteria and yeast that help to improve the digestive system.
So it's different types of bacteria and yeast, good and bad.
Correct.
And
probiotics are the good ones.
Right. So then you have this drink here called kefir. And we see it in the supermarkets. It looks like a juice. It bubbles a lot. Kefir, kombucha, I mean, why is it beneficial?
Okay, so I just want to backtrack 1 second, because when you asked about probiotics, I did not elaborate that there are different forms of probiotics. And you mentioned yogurt. Yogurt does contain live cultures, which are probiotic. So moving back to your current question, the difference is that kefir, kombucha, and sauerkraut all fall into a line of what's called fermented foods. And probiotics can either be in the form of fermented foods or they can be in the form of a supplement. So you can get these good bacteria and yeast into your body either by consuming the foods or consuming the tablets.
Why do I want... why is this industry so popular then? Why do I want good bacteria?
The industry is so popular, as you mentioned, because people are realizing, I think especially after COVID, people are realizing that their health is their wealth and that they need to prioritize their bodies and longevity. And the reason why probiotics are becoming so popular is because the research is showing how well connected your digestive system is to your whole body. So there are actually research showing that there are different parts of your body, example, your brain, that are actually linked to the health of your digestive system.
All right. So to help the listeners understand a little bit more, who may be not as familiar, when you get sick and you get gastro, doctors may recommend that you take some sort of a probiotic supplement, not so?
Yes.
What does that do for you?
Depending on which doctor you go to, huh? So what that does is, so when you get things like gastro, that could either be a bug, a bacteria, or a virus that has basically taken over the homes of the good bacteria. So just imagine that your gut is a community of good bacteria and yeast living. And when the virus or the bacteria that you ingest comes into the community, it takes over the houses and kicks out the good people. That's the best way for me to describe what happens when you get the sickness. And when you take the probiotics, you basically send back in an army of good bacteria and yeast to kick out the bad guys.
So when we buy products that are filled with probiotics, so as we said, yogurt, tabs, drinks, essentially it is putting back in good bacteria into your system.
Correct.
So then, you launched these products. What was the inspiration for actually getting into this line of business?
It's a really, really great story. So I studied science, microbiology, came back to Trinidad thinking I was going to create a cure for AIDS or something. And then I struggled to find a job as most qualified young individual.
How old were you then?
This was about 9 years ago. So I'm not really good at maths. I'm not going to try and work it out. So maybe in my 20-somethings. I was just trying to make it and trying to find a job. So I had various businesses, babysitting business, science lessons, and my cousin literally came to me and said, hey, I just went to a hippie commune and I found these live cultures, and I think being a scientist, you could do something really good with them.
A hippie commune here, hippie commune abroad.
A hippie commune abroad.
Okay, okay. I was wondering if we had those down here.
Yeah. Literally, I am a scientist, so I started, you know, experimenting, and little by little, created recipes. Started off with just ginger root, fermented them, extracted the flavor, and so on. And that's kind of how the journey began 9 years ago in my mom's kitchen.
Fermentation of foods, that's like making beer, making wine, pretty much along the same general concept, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, you used to drink these before or no?
Before 9 years ago, they didn't actually exist in this country.
Okay. So, the idea for this was a business idea, really. And at what point in time did you think of launching it then? So you played with it, you got your recipe right, you decided to launch it. What was that process like?
So it was literally a matter of going to a green market, or, you know, a market, you know, where people sell artisanal products. And I, at the time, was actually suffering really badly with irritable bowel syndrome, which, for the listeners that aren't familiar with that, it basically is an undiagnosed disease that gives you acid reflux and bloating and constipation and diarrhea. And once I started consuming the products, I really felt so much relief that I felt the desire to share this amazing product with everybody that I know and care about who have the same issues.
So when you went to the green markets and you started showing people this, people who aren't familiar with this, because as a Trinidadian, a lot of us, we weren't exposed to this before. You told somebody this is, I mean, you showed me this, I might think this is juice or soft drink, right?
Correct.
What was that conversation like?
The conversation was, are you into health? Do you suffer with acid reflux, bloating, gas, or constipation? And that was always my hook to get people interested, that allowed me 5 minutes of their time to explain what it was about.
Now, as a fermented item, it does cost more than, say, buying a juice. How do people react to the difference initially, if they don't know about it?
Originally, when we were using different types of raw materials, the taste wasn't as great as it is now. So a lot of people, you know, turned their nose down and weren't interested because of the taste. Some of them continued using it because they knew of the health benefits. But I could proudly say that right now, even though it is on the more expensive side, that's the reason why we don't market it as an actual beverage. We market it as a supplement that you just take a little bit of every day. So one bottle is not actually the serving size. And that helps people who can't afford, you know, more expensive items to be able to use it.
So you have to educate a lot of people locally then to get them to buy into it.
Yes.
Right? So then how does that guide your marketing efforts?
Okay, so the marketing really is about targeting the people that have these already existing stomach issues, and introducing to them a more reasonable, natural relief way to deal with these issues. I mean, I don't rule out taking probiotic supplements. I think it's all about taking all of them in combination so that your gut has the best chance at healing.
Now, you have flavors like sorrel. These are locally found sorrel?
Correct. So I bought that dark sorrel from a local farmer.
So how many different flavors you have?
Currently, we have about 14 different flavors in total, but that also includes the kefir, kombucha, and sauerkraut.
Okay. And a lot of the ingredients that you get to start these things are grown locally?
Most of them.
So do you grow these themselves, or do you have to reach out to farmers to get it?
I use farmers.
You have, like, special relationships with people?
Yeah. So over the years, I've been able to form relationships with a sorrel farmer. We also use cabbage in part of our manufacturing with some of our other items, as well as ginger and turmeric. So yes, over the years I've managed to build relationships with these farmers, but keep in mind that these are not items that are available throughout the year. So sometimes a farmer might have already reaped his crop for the year and I might have to reach out to another farmer. Nam Devco have really helped me with be able to reach out to all these farmers and have access to them.
Now, getting into business at a relatively young age, I'm going to say like 20s, around there, late 30s, early 30s, somewhere there. as a woman, what was that like? You had support from the family? People say, listen, why you want to go do this? What is it like?
Definitely in the beginning, it was like, what are you doing with your life? Why are you going down this road that nobody knows anything about? It's a bit of a risk. But I am a risk taker and I went for it. You know, even though I was told from many people that I'm not going to make it or it's not a good idea, it was a challenge. And I still do have lots of ups and downs, but I am a resilient businesswoman. And I think having a network of business people around you, not necessarily like helping you financially, but giving you free advice and taking that advice, is really something that has helped me along the way.
Is this something you want to, honestly, it is right now, be a family business? Is this something that if you have kids, you want your kids to come into and take over and move forward?
To be honest, I believe in allowing your kids to choose their own path. If you were to ask me what I want, I would say that if it is up to them and they choose to go down this path and they would like to be involved, then yes. But as of right now, it's a very small business. It's just myself and 3 employees. And thankfully, we have our distributor, Hardco. So that helps me not having to have so many employees. And I think I'm passionate about it. You have to be involved in this business if you are passionate. And if my kids don't turn out to be passionate about gut health and science, then I wouldn't want them to be involved.
So, you told me earlier, kombucha, kefir, sauerkraut. For people who have never heard those terms before, can you describe each one of them for the listeners?
Sure. So, I'll start with the kefir because that's the one we mentioned first. Some people say kefir, some people say kefir. It really just depends on how you see it. There's no right or wrong way. Kefir is essentially a type of beverage that is made using cultures called kefir grains. They look like Rice Krispies. And the way that we culture them is we feed them sugar and filtered water, and they multiply on their own. So let's say today I feed them, they're going to grow in a week to, you know, double the size, double the amount. So the main key takeaway is that the kefir is made with kefir grains. The kombucha, which is a similar beverage but different because it's made with caffeine, green tea, is made with a different type of culture called a SCOBY. So it looks like a round mushroom. And then the sauerkraut, we don't actually use a starter culture for that. We just use the cultures that are trapped into the container that we're making the sauerkraut from, which contains cabbage and salt. Those are the only 2 ingredients, well, and the chili flakes and coriander. That process traps organisms in the air, and that's how we start with the cultures for that particular product. So just to recap, the kefir has no caffeine in it, contains between 40 to 60 live probiotic cultures. The kombucha contains caffeine and contains up to 20 different probiotic strains. And the sauerkraut, which to me tastes like chow, it looks like pickles, but cabbage. It tastes like pickles, sorry, but it's cabbage. And that one contains up to 15 different live probiotic cultures.
So for the listeners who still are a little bit kind of confused with the whole talk about bacteria and kombucha and kefir and cultures, I'm going to break it down as simply as I think I could. Think about, You make food and you put it out, and after 24 hours you come back, it spoils. It's because bacteria or pathogens are pretty much everywhere. It's on your nose, it's on your face, it's in your hand, it's on your table, it's on your plates that you're eating your food from. Even if you wash it, there is still going to be some there. And with the exposure of moisture, exposure of food for them, which is of course sugars in your food and other things, they multiply, and they multiply very quickly, and the temperature that they are and the amount of food that there is for them determines how fast they multiply. So if you leave food in the danger zone temperature, of course food spoils faster, but if you put it in the fridge or the freezer where they don't multiply as quickly, then food does not spoil as quickly. That's the easiest way to think of it. So essentially what they do is they take certain foods and they put in good bacteria, and that multiplies, And that's how you get these sort of health drinks, I want to say. I want to say like a health drink. So that's an easy way of saying it. Now, we're going to jump into a quick commercial break. And when we get back, we'll open up the phone lines. If you have any specific questions on this line of topic, feel free to call us. And we're going to get into a little bit more on the process of your working with farmers when we come back.
Time again for secondary school students of CNC
to tackle tough topics
in a debate showdown,
season 2 of Make Your Point.
You'll be judged on content, strategy, and style.
And this season, the standard is high.
You showed concurrence but not causality.
I don't think both teams really addressed what each other said.
Claim, evidence, impact.
And I think that's something that needs to be worked on if you move on to the next stage.
Who will emerge victorious, capturing glory for themselves and their schools?
Tune in to find out.
Mondays at 8 p.m. with reruns on Wednesdays at 4:30 p.m. and Saturdays at 12 noon, and live streaming on Facebook and at cnc3.co.tt.
The show where secondary school students across TNT tackle tough topics in a debate showdown under pressure with limited time and before intimidating judges who all expect excellence. Season 1 set the standard, and winners San Fernando Central Secondary are back to defend their title. Can they repeat the feat? Tune into CNC3 to find out Mondays at 8 p.m. with reruns on Wednesdays at 4:30 p.m. and Saturdays at 12 noon. Live streaming on Facebook and cnc3.co.tt. Let's head back to Agribusiness Innovations on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Of course, if you want to jump in on the conversation, phone lines are 627-3223 if you have any questions or you want to add something to this. Of course, for those of you who know what dahi is relatively similar to this. That kind of brings it home a little bit. So, of course, 627-3223 if you want to jump in on the conversations, feel free. We're here. So you're dealing with local farmers. What are some of the challenges that you face with dealing with all local farmers?
Okay, challenges that I face so far. For example, the dark sorrel isn't always available. Sometimes they may be offering me the lighter sorrel, the red sorrel, but that unfortunately can't work for our process. So just lack of availability, timeline, supply chain issues really and truly. I mean, I've never had an issue dealing with a farmer himself or herself, but really just...
What about the prices of raw materials? Do you find that they fluctuate and make it difficult for you to maintain a steady price?
Raw materials as in the agri?
Well, let's say in general.
Yeah. I went through a major bottle supply chain issue in the last year or two. That significantly affected my profits and ability to have a steady production. Thankfully, that has now been smoothened out. But yes, I have had a lot of issues, especially during the COVID period with glass, and as well with, you know, the products on the sorrel or the ginger or the turmeric. Sometimes, unfortunately, if I can't access the ginger or turmeric, I might be able to get it from the market, and it's not guaranteed that it's going to be local. But other than that, the supply, I mean, I'm always very good at being able to barter with the farmers in a fair way, so that everybody is happy with the price that they get.
So ginger might go up twice the price in December. Is it that you'd make it before and store it, or would you just not produce it in that month?
So what we do actually is we buy the ginger earlier on in the year, we blend it and freeze it. So we're processing the ginger and turmeric in that way to avoid having to deal with those issues. However, if my production for those periods are heavier than I was anticipating, then I'm in a jam. And yes, I have had to pay the $19 per pound for ginger before.
What is the most exotic fruit or ingredient locally that you would use right now? And if you don't think any, is there any one in particular that you would like to get your hands on but can't get supply in?
In our early stages of the business, we tried out, and you can remind me what the fruit is called. It's a small red berry that is only available in certain parts of Trinidad in certain climates and a certain time of the year. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's a small red berry, a little tart.
Tosca, help out with that one.
It's cranberries you're talking about.
local fruit.
Local fruit.
Yeah.
That is a small...
And it stains your hand.
I know she's talking about it, you know, but I can't remember the name.
Maybe a caller will tell us. But
Describe it again.
It's a small red berry.
Mm-hmm.
Available in like mountains and higher up in Trinidad. And it stains up your hand. It's red.
Oh, gosh, no.
It's a fruit.
Not Group F. Would it be that?
I don't know. I'm not too sure. Maybe someone
anyway,
will tell us.
We will remember during this period, but that was something that, you know, was really hard to have a constant supply of, and that tasted amazing. Same with, you know, lemons or lime, you know. I mean, I find that nowadays the limes are just too hard. So to be able to use something like that is a bit challenging, I find, on the local side.
How do supermarkets react to you then going to them and saying, I want you to sell this for me?
It was hard. I mean, a lot of times I had to offer it to them on consignment and offer, you know, support on the marketing and so on. But thankfully, in the end, it all worked out because I never had anybody return any cases. But they were all like very unsure
right.
to give me a chance.
You find you get new people buying this, so it's the same kind of repeat customers coming, people who are familiar.
Definitely, when we do influencer marketing, or I recently started myself going on and doing videos, info videos, reels on my page, and I find that providing the public with the information on why it's important and why gut health is important, that really helps with gaining new customers.
Your target base, you find it's younger people, it's older people. Who do you think really reaches for something like this?
It's such a variety. I mean, there's different types of markets that we cater to. Anybody could have gut health issues, even, you know, toddlers. So that part of it is too big of a range to target. So we really target people who are between the ages of 30 to 50, who are either suffering with the health issues themselves, or they want to prevent the issues, or someone who keeps getting sick often and wants to boost their immune system, because our products also help with boosting your immune system.
No, all right. Do you have some directions on this? What size bottle is this?
12 ounces.
And I see you said serving size 4 ounces after a meal. Is that we don't drink this whole thing?
It's not going to make you end up in hospital, but it might make you end up in a toilet.
Okay, that's good to know. So
if you drink the whole thing.
So Tosca, we not drink any whole bottle.
And you haven't been for the day.
Now you see, I like sorrel, and it was on my mind to say, yeah, I'm going to have something good to drink with my lunch. Won't have to spend the money on the carbonated drinks. But now you're telling me. You see, I had to wait until I go home to eat.
I just want to elaborate. The reason being is that there's so many live cultures in there that, especially if your gut is not in a good place right now, it's going to like be like a complete shock. So I would definitely start with 1/3 of the bottle per day after a meal. And then if you find that you're not having any reactions, you can work your way up to half a bottle, but you can actually end up overpopulating your gut.
You ever thought about growing the raw materials for these yourself?
We have a couple things in the works for this year, like possibly growing our own turmeric. The issue is that with some of our kombucha specialty flavors, green tea is a key ingredient. And so right now we're using dried fruits mixed with the green tea. And a lot of those fruits are not available locally. If I were to find a supply locally of green tea and who could supply me with the dried fruits or herbs, then yes, I would be able to do it.
Tosca, you know, when we're in agribusiness, everybody's always telling us, you never thought about growing your own raw materials? And I remember
asking you that question.
It's a nice thing in concept, eh? But when you sit down and you tell me that, and I sit down and I say, wait, on top of being an agro-processor and a marketer, I had to now be a farmer too?
No, but the reason why the question arises is because it seems so hard to get the raw materials at a decent enough price so that, one, you could continue your production, two, you could deliver on time, and still make a profit. So, you know, you kind of want to eliminate the middle process or the middleman by growing your own stuff.
I'll tell you something. We make sweet potato fries, right? And sometimes the price of sweet potatoes goes to $1,000 a bag, which would be three times as much as I would pay for a bag if I had to be profitable on the market. So if I were to grow my own sweet potatoes and the price reach $1,000 a bag, you don't feel like going to sell it on the market like a farmer. I would sell it to myself either, you know what I mean? So everybody along the supply chain wants to maximize their profits, of course, because everybody's a business person. So, you know, but to be a farmer too and to get into this is just so much more work, unless you really have the capital resources to hire somebody to work for you and oversee and do it, which a lot of us don't have access to that extra capital because I already have money tied up in machinery for processing, stock for processing, packaging. Now I have to find money to stock up for planting. That's so much more. It's hard.
So how do you figure that problem out then?
Plenty of times they don't. You try to find a balance.
Right.
So I'm not asking her, would you want to plant your own raw materials? And it's a nice concept, but I do understand the difficulties in doing that. You could imagine waking up and having to go and tend to ginger from 5 to 7 and then go in the plant after and then, you know what I mean?
Have you ever heard of a plant called lemon verbena?
No.
Okay. It is an ingredient that we used to use in one of our flavors, which was wild mint. I even tried growing it in my garden just to have that steady supply, and it just wasn't enough, you know? The work that it took me having to go pick it in the hot sun, put it in a bag, take it to my factory. At the end of the day, like, sometimes, you know, having the access to and having, you know, cheaper prices isn't worth the work that it's required to get it, you know? And when you have a business, sometimes you have to weigh out the options and see what makes more sense. So really and truly, if you ask me, do I want to? The answer is no. Am I going to? Maybe for one of them. But on a general scale, I'm all about doing what makes sense and what makes your daily processes easier, you know?
Farming is hard work, you know. Like, I'm big and I have muscles, but like a sweet pepper, I'm big and I'm hot. You know, a car, the physical manual labor involved does not get the respect, even if it's not something big and heavy. You're lifting up, you're bending over a whole day, you're stooping down, your fingers in mud, you're getting bite by ants, you bunks up some bees.
What are problems?
You come the next day and you find half your field gone.
Don't talk about that. That is another stress that a lot of farmers seem to perennial larceny, you know?
Yeah.
That is a very bad problem.
Did anybody discourage you from getting into agribusiness specifically?
Never. I've never had anyone try to discourage it from me, only encourage it, thankfully.
That's good. A lot of people are always afraid of the risks that are involved. So you get into agriculture business, you're going to fight and you're never going to see me. So that's good that you had that kind of level of support in there.
Also, the root and the passion of what it is that we do, it's linked to the agro-processing, you know, because when we have a head of cabbage, we are inspecting that cabbage and we want to have the freshest cabbage. And I know that when we have that, then the end product that the customer is receiving is going to be the best quality option available, you know?
What do you find is the hardest part of being in this line of business?
The hardest part? Depends on which week you ask. But in general, I would say not having a business degree. Personally, because I have a lot of resources in terms of people and organizations that I could turn to for advice or help. But not having that, you know, backbone of having a business degree, I mean, it's just been like every year a learning curve and experience. You know, I've learned a lot, but I still have so much more to learn. And I sometimes wish that I had that educational background in business, you know.
What is the biggest mistake you've made since you opened the company?
The biggest mistake I made since opening the company, I would say, was not listening enough to the business persons who were willing to give me free, unsolicited advice.
Okay. Well, can you tell us specifically what happened, like one incident?
I mean, one of the incidents was thinking via a salesperson to do all of my sales for me. For we had, so during COVID we had an online store, and I was pregnant at the time, and I was like, right, I have to go on maternity leave. I want to take at least 2 weeks, because you know, when you own your business, that's as much as you could get, you know. So I went, found this person to handle all my sales calls, and at the end of the day, it wasn't me. And so my customers weren't dealing with me, and that was I didn't know at the time, but the whole point of them dealing with me was why they wanted to have the relationship and the sales, because they were also getting the gut health tips, so being able to just chat with me. So that was one of the things that I could see like as a major mistake. Another one could be not taking enough risk and not doing my research enough on bottle supply options, not asking enough people to bring in bottles to me, and just accepting what's available on the market.
Okay. I've made mistakes that cost me a lot of money, and I would say that was, oof, it happens, eh? It happens in business. What is next for the company then? What's your next step? What's your goal for this year?
We have a lot of exciting things happening this year. In particular, we moved to the Diamondvale Industrial Estate just in December. And the reason being is that we have big plans to export to the Caribbean and Latin America. We're starting off in Barbados. We currently have a buyer interested for bringing it into Barbados. So, I mean, that's always been a dream of mine, is to improve the gut health of the Caribbean people. So, I mean, that's like a really big, exciting next step for us. Of course, you don't just decide one day you're going to export and then it happens. So there's a lot of steps that have to happen in between. But that is our current next big step.
Food sometimes is a trend. I don't know if you remember, I had a time everybody wanted moringa. Mm. You couldn't get a tree with a leaf of moringa. No, you can't even, people just give it away.
I also did moringa kefir.
Are you afraid of this being a trend, or do you think that in food this is here to stay?
Honestly, I mean, you know, if you'd asked me a few years ago, I might have said possibly. But I think 9 years is enough time to decide that it's not going anywhere. I mean, there are constantly products being developed that are what the manufacturers of those companies might think is better than this. This is as natural as you're going to get it. In other parts of the world, even in Trinidad, in some gourmet stores, you find more commercialized products that are supposed to be doing the same thing as mine. And one of the things I, you know, will always do is try to keep it as natural and as functional as possible moving forward.
So then how do you deal with foreign competition on the market?
Foreign competition on the local market, our biggest competitor locally sits on the grocery shelf right next to mine. Our price is competitive. However, you know, our packaging is a little bit challenging. We're working with a consultant out of the US on improving our manufacturing processes to deal with these small issues that we have. But generally speaking, I am the only one that I am aware of in the world that markets these products the way that I do, in that it's a multi-serve beverage. It's not a one-time serve beverage.
No, I've had this on the table here. It's been bubbling ever since. Does it stop bubbling?
It won't stop bubbling. The thing is, it's in this temperature. It's supposed to be in a fridge.
Okay.
So all now, the fermentation is continuing. So it is something that has to be kept cold. But that's why you're seeing bubbles, because like I mentioned, it has live probiotic cultures. So that's just proof that it is containing live cultures, and it's going to help get rid of any bloating or acid reflux you may have had. For the listeners that maybe had a doubles this morning for breakfast and they're really struggling today.
How long do these things take for this product? What's the shelf life like?
The shelf life depends on the items itself, but due to the nature of the product, the pH is quite low. And because of that, we don't have to worry too much about spoilage. So it'd be between 6 to 12 months.
Okay, that's pretty reasonable. Being temperature sensitive, having it on a grocery shelf. I mean, I have issues where people take sweet potato fries and push it around a cart for an hour and then decide to throw it and I want to go and get the next one and put it back on the shelf. How do you deal with that issue?
I completely understand. I mean, I have customers that call me saying they open a bottle and it spilled everywhere because it was sitting in a car for an hour. You know, I'm like, well, I'm really sorry, but it does say keep refrigerated on the bottle, you know? So I try to be the most polite customer service friendly person on the phone. Sometimes depending on the location of the person, you know, I might offer that they take it back to the supermarket and see if that supermarket will give them an exchange if, you know, it's really bad. Otherwise, I might try to offer them a return. personally. But at the end of the day, it's just that explanation to the customer that this is a very temperature sensitive item. And, you know, if you want to continue using product, these are my recommendations, you know?
Pretty simple. Now, learning the manufacturing process, learning to operate a professional commercial space, what is that like?
It's been interesting. We have moved about 5 times since the beginning. So each time we've moved to a larger space. When I first started, like I mentioned, I was in my mom's kitchen. Then we moved to something called a milk room, where my uncle had a farm of goats, and he had a room that was maybe the size of this desk. And, you know, that was the space that we were working with. So each time we've moved to a larger space and had to buy more equipment, you know, it was just a learning experience and figuring it out, adaptability to change, really and truly.
You ever made probiotic goat milk then?
I did. I used to make something that's very similar to the dahi that you mentioned earlier, called goat milk kefir.
Okay. How did Trade Islands respond to it?
Not bad. The problem was the shelf life. We've also made goat milk yogurt, but again, the shelf life just was not long enough.
Yeah. As a issue, being able to keep things there without spoiling, you want to keep it as long as...
And without adding preservatives, you know?
Yeah.
What's your shelf life on your frozen sweet potato fries?
When we do frozen items, for us, that's why I like frozen. Frozen, you could stay frozen for at least a year if the packaging is thick enough. But, I mean, you still have to be careful how it gets into the customers, how it's stored on the supermarket shelf, what temperature they're keeping it at. So you're looking to grow the company, you're looking to grow into the Caribbean. Have you ever done trade shows then?
We've only done the TIC locally. We've not done any international trade shows to date.
Have any intentions to?
I don't mind. I mean, I'm just one person, and so I have to do what I have the capacity to do, you know, in the moment. I definitely would love to go to an international trade show. I mean, definitely Colombia for me is one of my target markets, and I would love to go especially to there.
Why Colombia?
Colombia is a very growing country for, you know, bringing in imports. And I think that as part of the Latin American region that we would like to move into, one thing I didn't mention is that our product is available in PriceSmart. They're actually our number one customer. And they have PriceSmart in Colombia. And just through relationships and learning about the ecosystem of business people over there, it is a country that we think could really benefit.
I know we have some trade agreements with Colombia. I think that we have one that is on the books for Chile as well. So I guess within those markets, definitely you might have some potential business coming out of there. Now, you have 14 SKUs right now. You're going to grow them further to adding anything more in there?
I mean, you know what it's like when storage space is an issue. So right now I'm actually trying to reduce the amount of SKUs that we offer because, you know, when we ferment, we have to do it in large batches. And every jar is a jar that could be used by another flavor.
Right.
So, you know, we're trying to focus the jar space for the faster selling items. And so currently I'm not looking at creating any new SKUs, but actually just reducing a couple.
But in the supermarket, stock all 14 or they pick and choose?
It depends on the supermarket, to be very honest, and the shelf space available. Some of them do stock all items.
Okay. All right. So it's just about 20 minutes to 11. I think we need to jump into another quick break.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
Well, TNT, we've got 15 more minutes in this hour. 15 more minutes with Jody White and Agribusiness Innovations. Welcome back.
So we're back. Dominique has stepped out for just a few minutes, but when she gets back, definitely we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to talk about the market of probiotics. It's one of the fastest growing trends in food today globally, with a market estimated to be about $87 billion and growing. It's forecasted to grow for the next 10 years at least. Of course, if you want to jump in on the conversation, 627-3223, feel free to give us a call. Jump in and tell us about your experience with fermented foods, even if it's something like dahi, feel free to call us and tell us a little bit more about your experience.
Hello, good morning. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM.
Hello, good morning. I just wanted to ask your guest there, where does she see her company in the next 5 to 10 years going forward? What are her plans? What are her projections? Because she seems to have a lot of potential for growth in her organization. Where does she see her company going forward? Thank you.
Hi, morning. Thanks for the question. I really love those types of questions. So right now, our five-year plan includes growth in the regional and local markets. We are currently focusing on growth in the food service, which is like restaurants, cafes, that sort of thing. Our sauerkraut is, which is a cabbage, is an item that can be used so versatile in menu on a menu in terms of being an add-on item or is as part of a recipe. So that's just, you know, one of the growth ideas that we kind of have planned for the next few years. And then on the regional side, we plan on exporting, as I had mentioned earlier, to the Caribbean and Latin American markets. I'm not really thinking of tapping into the US. There's just so much competition over there right now. But we are currently doing everything by hand. So as part of our growth plan, we want to really scale up and be able to do everything either semi-automatically or fully automatically.
Have you been able to benefit from like grants or any of those programs, incentives that exist?
Right now, we just got approved one grant facility from Export TT to be able to do testing with Kariri. But I am going to be reaching out to them to see how else they can further assist, as well as with the IDB Shaping the Future of Innovation program that they have.
In the company now, how much manual labor you said you have to do as part of it, or are you there just more like a supervisory role?
Business, I was doing everything by hand myself, but thankfully I have three production staff now, so that I don't actually need to be doing the production, but I guide it, and as we get information and advice from our consultant, I teach my team and we do little training sessions.
So we don't have a call, but we have a suggestion of the fruit that you were talking about. Is it gulab jamun?
Jamun, yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Jamun, all right.
Jamun, yeah.
They make a lot of wine and so with it, yeah?
It's quite
yes,
tasty.
They make a very nice wine out of that.
So, yeah. So, you know, the early days of startup and business, Tosca, I can't tell you how much cassava I peel. Peel.
Do you know that
peel.
There's a special way of peeling the cassava that doesn't make it so tedious?
Anything, everybody say that until you sit down with £1,000 in front of you and you had to ring this around. It's that easy. You know, so...
Jody, I just want to ask, how did you get into your agro-processing business?
The search for money. That is the truth of it. Like you said, you needed a... You started business because you couldn't find a job that suited you. And it was same for me. I was employed and I left the job and I just started getting into business. And it's just one thing led to the other. I wouldn't say it's a necessity because I could have gotten a job back then in my field. It's just wanted to try it out. And it's just one thing always leads to the other in terms of opportunities, and it was just something that I saw that I could possibly do and thought it would be a good business, and that's what kind of led me to this point, and that's kind of what led me to being on the radio now. And as I say, one thing always leads into the other. Now, the staff that you have, is it mixed male, female? Is it mostly females? Do you find that there's a difference in terms of hiring males versus women in such an industry?
Currently, we have two female and one male employees. I think that when it comes to what they consider a kitchen type of environment, the females are more predominant, but we try to mix it up. I mean, there are men who are really interested in food and, you know, food processing. So it's just really a matter of me finding who those males are in the region that want to be involved.
You know, Tosca, one of the things that we found when we do studies in a region with agriculture is that women tend to take better care in processes that need more care. So, for instance, if you have to plant something that is delicate, A man will pelt it in the ground, a woman would take her time. If something needs to be measured and measured exactly, women tend to be more cautious in measuring and following procedures. A man is more likely to guesstimate.
Go with the spirit.
Go with the spirit and go with the feel. So we find that women tend to be a lot more careful in some of these procedures. Of course, it's a generalized statement, but that's one of the things that farmers have said, that when they have certain tasks to do, if somebody has to, say, pick an item that is delicate, they don't want a man picking it. They prefer women to go out in the fields and handle that part of the process. Now, I don't know if you're willing to say this, but what geographical area of Trinidad do you cover with this?
In terms of the products?
Products, like where could people get it as far south as Mayaro?
Yeah, absolutely. Persaud's, Stockett and Mayaro. We have managed to successfully cover every single part of the island, including Tobago, thankfully. Deep South, Arima, Sandy Grande, name it, and it's there.
You...
Through Hardgo's distribution, thankfully.
Have you ever had trouble with the distribution network, though?
I mean, depends. What do you mean by that?
I mean, challenges. I mean, you may move from one distributor to another or one range of supermarkets to the other. Have you had any challenges specifically with anything in terms of payment time or how they handle your products? You ever had that problem?
I would definitely say that in the beginning, when I was handling the distribution myself and was driving to all the supermarkets, as I'm sure you know what that's like, maybe in the beginning stages of your business, it is challenging. And so at the end of the day, challenges that I may have faced, which were maybe getting paid late by a supermarket or, you know, dealing with the purchasing manager of that supermarket, you know, all of those issues, thankfully, have been resolved by me using the distributor that I use now. I've not really jumped around too much because I've gotten really great service from Hardco. So thankfully, I've not had to deal with other distributors.
Okay. So, we have another phone call on the line.
Hello, good morning. You're live on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Hello, morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to find out which part in Central Chaguanas you can get what you're advertising there. Thank you.
Sure, yes. You can actually find in Central, you can find our products in all the supermarkets, Extra Foods, Massey Stores, Price Mart, just to name a few, as well as Superfarm. Thank you.
So you say you're going to change the packaging. Are you going to change the look of the product as well? Like, you're going to change your label, your logos?
The only label change we plan on making, really, is introducing the nutritional values. So that's why we're doing testing with Kariri. Other than that, we're quite happy with the branding. So we're going to actually keep the bottle and label. The only difference is that we're going to be changing our manufacturing process a little bit so that the gas is more controlled, which will be able to have more of a stable end product.
The name of it is Amare. What does it mean?
Amare means to love in Latin.
Okay.
So love probiotics.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense. So if there is anything that you would like in the agricultural sector to happen, or even let's just say the manufacturing sector to support you more, what would you say you would like to see?
I mean, in terms of development, I mean, I think sorrel is such a diverse item that, I mean, I don't understand how come they're not doing greenhouses or something like that with the farmers. You know, the government have a lot of interest in growing the agricultural side of this island, and I'm not sure if they do or don't have these plans, but I think something like sorrel should really be available throughout the year, don't you?
I mean, sorrel has plenty of things that people make it down here, where they make it in jams and jellies.
I had some nice spicy jam the other day, a sorrel jam.
And I think there are three types of sorrel. There's the dark sorrel, the red sorrel, and white sorrel.
Correct, yeah.
And when it's imported, they call it hibiscus?
Well, hibiscus is actually a cousin, which is a flower, to sorrel.
Okay, so it's similar.
That's
yeah.
Another. Mm-hmm. We actually do hibiscus kefir as well.
I know I saw that. So it's not the hibiscus that we see Like a hibiscus plant.
I think it is.
It is? Yeah. Same flower, the same big flower, really long stem?
Yeah. You know, you can make tea out of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Also the flower?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shucks.
You
know, since mealybug, I haven't seen a lot of that around.
Because the mealybug was very detrimental to hibiscus and to buttercups and a lot of plants here locally and fruits. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So probiotics found in drinks, milk items, tabs. What are the problems then that you say we face if we don't have a good balance of healthy bacteria?
I think it's also important to note that all of these items are actually on a scale of probiotic content. So yogurt is actually at the bottom of the scale, and items like sauerkraut or kimchi are on the higher end of the scale. So whilst it's important to consume all of these items, you should be doing them all regularly if you don't have an issue with dairy. Could you repeat the question? I haven't had my second cup of coffee yet.
You know what I remembered? You know what I remembered? And I saw her do? I saw her put sauerkraut on her doubles.
I did.
I saw and that.
There was a lot of backlash that we got on social media.
Trini, me don't like you, to see the doubles.
Let me tell you, it was real good.
Blasphemy.
Kind of like the cucumber.
We've got another call if you want to take it. 627-323-625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning again.
Morning.
I'm diabetic and hypertension. How good it is, and I have bad circulation due to veins. How good it is for an eye to use. Thank you.
I definitely would check with your doctor just to make sure that the products are safe for you to use. But we have had customers with diabetes use our products in small amounts.
Yeah, so just double down. Of course, if you have a health condition like hypertension and diabetes, of course, be sure to visit your doctor so that they can best tell you if you can include something into your diet. We wouldn't be able to make a recommendation to you over the radio for treatment. So if you would like to include something like a probiotic in your diet, be sure to visit your doctor and they will best advise you how to incorporate it, how much, that sort of thing. But we do appreciate you calling and asking us that question. So as we kind of come towards the end of the show, you have any closing remarks for our listeners? Anything, any bit of experience in, as a woman in business? Anything you'd like to see happen? Just any closing remarks in general?
The main thing I would like to say firstly is that we as a people in this country don't consume enough fiber. And I think that is causing a lot of health issues. So I just would like to encourage, you know, the listeners to consume more fiber. And that being said, I would like to see the country, the government being more involved with pushing fiber on and educating the people on why it's important to consume more fiber in your diet. Gut health is not talked about enough, and I think definitely it would be great to see the government doing a little more on that side, and the health sector. And, you know, being a woman in business, I always like to encourage other female entrepreneurs and businesswomen and be a source of advice, free advice, you know, if anybody wants to get some resource information or help, you know, advice on. I'd definitely like to be able to be a source of someone that could help others. Create a network of other businesswomen.
I think you have one more phone call. Let's just take it before we wrap up.
Hello, good morning. You're live on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Morning to you, and morning to your guest.
Morning.
I couldn't help but hearing that it's an $87 billion industry, is it?
Worldwide, yes.
Right. So I wanted to get the local aspect of it with respect to the revenue streams there. And do you have a website that I can tap into?
I do have a website, which is amariprobiotics.com.
Now, the size of the market, I don't think we have that information coming out to be readily available. To
the size of the local market would basically consist of my brand and the biggest competitor. It comes up to 3 million TT per year.
Okay, That's significant. Yep. All right. So I think this brings us to the end of our show this week. It's the first time we've spoken on
coffee.
You need coffee too.
I'll sip of probiotics. Yeah. On this topic, thank you so much, Amari Probiotics, Dominique
Hemiob,
my apologies.
Not far.
I was close there. Thank you very much to all listeners for tuning in. We really appreciate you. Tune in next week again for another installment of Agribusiness Innovation here on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Thank you for having me.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.